This show is a part of the Podnuts Network. Find more shows like this at www.podnuts.com.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go.
Welcome to Nightwise.com.
Nightwise.com.
Tired of choosing between Macs, Linux, and OS X? Listen to the Nightwise.com podcast and learn how to slide from operating system to operating system using our hack tips and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Tune tech into your way of life and let technology work for you instead of the other way around.
On the edge of real and cyberspace, there's one place you can go, and you found it. Welcome to Nightwise.com, the one and only podcast with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Whether you're a Windows, Linux, Mac, iOS, Android, or Sun Solaris user, we have the tips and tricks you need to tune tech into your way of life instead of the other way around. My name's Nightwise, and for the coming 60 minutes or so, I'll be your host on this episode of the Nightwise.com podcast, KW806, Server Room in a Box. For more information and the show notes, head on over to the website, www.nightwise.com, that's KNIGHTWISE.com, where you'll find the links to everything we talk about and the Nightwise.com media feed. Subscribe to that feed, get all of our podcasts delivered to your podcatcher, automatically letting technology work for you. Hey guys and girls, it's great to be back behind the microphone. It's once again studio live recording time here at Nightwise.com. We are in the Nightwise.com studio, and we've turned the camera around for those who are curious, who want to see the broadcast. You'll get a little bit of an overview of my office that I haven't quite cleaned up properly because I forgot some junk in the back. But for those of you who are spotting the nice rows of starships here up top, that's my pride and joy of my Starship Enterprises that I have in my personal little ready room. It's great to be behind the microphone. We have a geeky topic for you today, a very geeky topic for you today. Let me just unclutter my headphone cables here. And that is going to be how to build a server room under your desk, how to build a data center in a box, how to virtualize your servers into one machine and use the power of virtualization to make them work for you. Now, where does this come from? Well, this comes from a little bit of experience that I've had over the last couple of weeks, tinkering and fidgeting with my home network and my home setup, because I started up my own company a couple of months ago, and that meant that I needed to kind of professionalize my infrastructure just a little bit and separate out some of the things that I do, some of the things that were geared toward home entertainment, some of the things that were geared towards producing podcasts like I do right now, and some of the things that were geared toward running my company. I thought about getting a rack and filling it up with different servers, and then the lovely Niana looked at me and tapped her forehead and asked me, "Are you nuts?" And actually it is, because with one fairly powerful machine with enough RAM and CPU power and some free software, you can build a data center and shove it underneath your desk. How it's done? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. So let's get into the meat of the matter. Before we start talking about building a data center in a box and shoving it underneath your desk, we're going to have to talk about what technology you want to use to do that. And the technology that we're going to use is virtualization. Now, what is virtualization? If you've listened to the Nightwise.com podcast before, you might have heard about virtualization and virtual machines. We just love virtualization and virtual machines because it gives a slider so many possibilities. But what is it? Well, if you're new to the concept, we'll try to explain it to you using a Star Trek reference. Because quite frankly, if you cannot explain it in a Star Trek reference, it's not worth explaining at all. Imagine the holodeck, you know, the the holographic room where our Star Trek characters walk into, and suddenly a scene appears with characters who all seem real, but they're not real. They're actually holographic images used, and they use tractor beams and lights and holograms and stuff to make them feel real. That's actually how virtualization works. Virtualization is having a computer which is not really a real physical computer. It's a holographic computer. And you can look at it, walk around it, interact with it, talk to it, push against it, try to knock it over, try to take over the world with it. It's a real computer. For all intents and purposes, it behaves and looks like a real computer. But it's not a physical computer. It's a virtual computer. Now, where does this virtual computer actually live? Well, the hologram lives inside the holodeck, and your virtual computer or your virtual machine lives inside your virtual host. This is a real physical computer that has the enough resources like memory and power and drive space to virtually create computers inside of itself and run them like a program. It's kind of a program, but that program is so complex and so dense, it's like a real computer. If you open up your virtual machine, you can browse the hard drive of the virtual machine. It's just like a real computer, but it's virtual. A hologram looks just like a real person, but he's a hologram. And he lives on a holodeck, so does your virtual machine. As I said, the virtual machines use the resource of the real machine, of the host OS. So, for example, if you have a computer with 4 gigabytes of RAM and 200 gigabytes of drive space, and you install a virtual machine application, so a virtual machine client or server, actually, and you build a virtual computer, you'll have to assign some memory and some disk space to that virtual computer. So if you want to build 10 virtual machines and give each virtual machine 4 gigabytes of memory and 10 gigabytes of disk space, well, you need 40 gigabytes of disk space, or where was I? 10 computers, 1 gigabyte of memory. So you need at least 10 gigabytes of memory in your host machine, even a little bit more, because your host machine has to, you know, be a host machine too. The holodeck needs power for the holodeck and for the holodeck characters. So that's what virtualization is all about, and that's one of the things that you need to have before we get started. You need to have a computer with enough resources to run 1, 2, or maybe 3 virtual computers at the same time. Now, the great thing is, computers these days are a little bit too powerful for their own good. You know, an i7 with 16 gigabytes of RAM runs Windows just fine. But an i3 with 4 gigabytes of RAM runs Windows just fine. I mean, it will be a little slower, but sometimes these really, really powerful machines have some resources to spare, and those resources are going to be the ones that we use. So what can you do with it, with virtualization? I mean, why would you run virtual or fake computers inside your own computer? I mean, you have a computer, you have an operating system. Why emulate other computers inside of that computer? Well, for the home, on your laptop or desktop, it's great to play around with. I mean, you can run different versions of operating systems without having to reinstall your machine. You don't have to wipe your OS. You just install a virtual machine application and start creating virtual computers inside your system. And that's great if you want to play around and test. If you say, like, I've got a Mac, but I want to play around with Linux, but I'm a little bit too nervous to reinstall, or I don't have a spare machine, that's okay. You can just create a virtual machine and run any version of Linux on there, or in Windows, or God knows what. You can emulate any operating system, or it's not emulate, it's virtualize, any operating system inside another one. So that has great uses. Like, you can experiment to try and play around with operating systems you haven't tested, or you can build your own little lab with different machines running on your same machine. Remember, you need the resources to do this, but you can build your little lab. you know, I'll build a Windows server here and a Windows 95 client there, and I'll try to let them talk to each other over a virtual network on my Mac. That's something that you can do. Were you in the olden days needed 10 clunkers behind you to, you know, try and emulate networks and stuff? Now you just need one machine with enough power to do the job. That's it. The other things that you can do with it is slide. As I said in the beginning, we sliders love virtual machines because they allow us to slide from one operating system to the other. Instead of dual booting your computer either into Windows or into Linux, if it has enough resources, why not run one or the other as a virtual machine inside the other or the one? So you can either run Linux inside Windows or run Windows inside Linux, and you have both operating systems at the same time. If you start working with multiple desktops or multiple monitors, it's just great. I mean, because Windows there and Linux there, and if you have a third monitor and enough resources, there's your Mac, and it's all running on one machine. So that's, you know, you just need one keyboard, one mouse, and you can take it with you everywhere. So it's also great to slide from one operating system to the other. And the one thing that virtual machines and holodeck characters have in common is a hologram cannot leave the holodeck. So whatever, if you set it up right, happens inside a virtual machine stays inside a virtual machine. Like, for example, you run Windows and you have Windows 8.1 and you decide, you know what, I'm going to try out Windows 95. And you install it and you play around with it, and you would launch a virus inside Windows 95. Windows 95, so old, can't protect itself, immediately infected, and the virus eats its way through the folders and into the hard drive of the virtual machine. It's not your hard drive. There is a separation. It cannot jump ship unless you really, really wanted to. This is great if you are, either want to play around with viruses and test things and you know, do evil stuff, or that you say, I want to do my banking, but I don't really trust the computer I'm on right now. I'll just take my virtual machine, which is also an enclosed environment because nothing from the virtual machine can get out, but nothing from the outside can get in unless you really wanted to. That's what virtual machines are like in the home. But that's not what we're going to talk about today, because actually we're going to do something that is done in the enterprise. And I'm not talking about one of these enterprises right above me. For you audio listeners, I have some enterprise models behind me on the shelf. So not that enterprise, no, the enterprise, like the corporations. And that's going to be something that we call virtualization and building a virtual data center. There used to be this big server room with five different servers. Let's say five different servers. One was a DL380 that was 5 years old, and the other was 4 years old, and the other was 3 years old, and that was another one. And they had five different functions. Now, if one machine broke physically, they had to find a new physical server to replace it with and reinstall everything and stuff like that. If it needed more RAM, they needed to power it down and give it more memory and make sure that they still could get the slots and power it back up. And, you know, it was a hassle because sometimes hardware wasn't supported anymore, or you didn't have money to buy new ones, and it was really tied to a physical machine. So if something happened, you know, you really needed to reinstall the OS and stuff. That's something that doesn't need to be done with virtualization anymore, because what do enterprise companies do right now? They buy a virtual server, or a hypervisor as it's called, which is this big holodeck. And they take all of their servers and turn them into virtual machines and put them in the holodeck. And whenever a server needs more memory, they just take the resources from the hypervisor, which we call the host OS, and assign them to the virtual machine. So that way they have all of those different servers running on one piece of hardware, which is in the enterprise something that is, you know, built redundantly and stuff like that. But it gives you a lot of flexibility. I mean, we have the accounting server, and the accounting server is going to do the quarterly innings, and it needs a lot of memory, and we don't want to buy that memory because it's just for a week. No problem. You just add or assign extra memory to that machine, and then it's more powerful for like 3 days, and then you don't need it anymore. So you can either, you know, take the resources away or power down the entire machine. You can move it from one data center to the other. It's like having all kinds of different servers in one uniform hardware rack, and you can play around and move around with them. Now, these virtual machines, or these servers, appear just like real servers on the network, and system admins who connect to them remotely often don't really have a clue, is this a virtual machine or is this a physical one? I don't remember. I don't care. It just works. So why are we talking about this? Well, it's a very good question. Well, let's say you have problems, issues, something you want to resolve. Let's say you have the problem that you want to experiment. You say like, oh my God, I'm just, you know, beginning to geek out as a slider, and I want to do Windows and Mac and Linux. And so I'll go to the store and I'll buy a clunker and I'll buy another old machine and I'll install this and that. You need monitors and machines and power and room, especially room. You need a lot of room. And that's not always convenient. You got to have a complete lab of computers lying around. And if one experiment fails, you really have to reinstall that machine. And it's really not nice to do. They take up room and they take up power. They are not ice bear power. They're not polar bear friendly. You know, and when they take up power, they require CO2. The COW is COW is a cow, nightwise. And when they take up CO2, the atmosphere warms up and the ice melts, and that's not polar bear friendly. And that's something when you can start using virtual machines, like I said, with experimenting and stuff like that. That was really cool. You don't need old clunkers anymore. But what if you have a server in your house? Because, you know, the experimental thing I was talking about, you know, on your workstation, on your computer, on your laptop. But what if you have a server in the house that does things? And, you know, what do you do when that server breaks? I've been there, you know, I've had my server in the house physically break. So it was a hassle. I had to get all the data off, and I had to reinstall it and reinstall all the settings and, you know, make it all work again. It was a real hassle. And, you know, when I have a server in the house, I want to experiment. So, you know, you tinker with your server and you go like, what happens when I do this or that? And what happens is you break stuff. And then, oh my God, I broke the server. Sorry. I broke the server. Now what? Nothing works anymore. I can't do file sharing. Oh my God, I can't play my MP3s on the stereo. I cannot watch my legally downloaded TV shows that I stored on my server. I broke my server. Oh God, I have to reinstall it all over again. That's something that happens as well. And what if you need multiple servers? You really need multiple. I would like to have a server for this and a separate server for that. And I only have one machine. Well, let's imagine you would have the flexibility of somebody who likes to tinker and the power of a data center, you know, with multiple servers, all inside one little machine. Well, that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to show you how you can use free software to build your own data center in a box, under your desk, in the house, without getting your significant other mad and being polar bear friendly. Yeah. Before we start building that data center in a box, there is, of course, the question, why? We told you what you can do with it and what the perks are, but why? Well, I can only give you my own story as to why. I'm a cross-platform slider. You know, I use multiple operating systems, and I love to experiment and to learn. If there is anybody out there who wants to get into IT and wants to learn things, I can only say one thing, play. Play with computers, experiment, tinker, break things, try things out, play. There's nothing more important to learn than how the best way to learn is to play with computers. If you want to be a Windows 2000 system engineer or Windows server administrator and you only read books, I'm not hiring you ever. If you say, oh, in my bedroom, I've got like two systems, and one of them is domain controller, and then in the basement, I've got a second one, and I've had a little domain at home, and we only have two users, so I made a user for the cat, but the cat never logs in, but then you're hired, because that's the way you learn. That's the way I learned, and that's the way I continue to learn. My profession, I'm a freelance IT consultant. I am doing big enterprises, and still, I want to play around with the concepts that I see in the field, even though it's in big companies. I want to try them out at home. Hence the source of this podcast, actually, a little bit, because, you know, it gives you a insight into the matter and into the technical side that is surprisingly helpful when you encounter it in the real world, because the concepts stay the same. The price of the hardware just goes up exponentially. So, you know, I like to experiment, I like to learn, and I want my technology to work for me. So I want to experiment, and I want to be able to, you know, when my experiments fail, scrap them, and when they really work, I want them to stay around at a daily basis, on a daily basis, when I can really rely on them. So I want to tinker with stuff, and if stuff works and I start using it, I want it to be something that I can rely on. I also have a new situation here. You know, as I said, I'm a freelance IT consultant. I started my own company a couple of months ago, and that meant that I had different requirements. I do my work for Nightwise.com, which is multimedia production and podcasts and stuff, doing social media and storing files and doing all kinds of creative stuff that I love to do, and experimenting and tinkering and installing and trying out and reviewing. That's one of the things that I do here, and that my digital ecosphere, as I call it, is full. But then I also have my company, and my company has a whole different set of requirements. It requires stability and predictability, and it needs to be online, and it needs to be stable, and it doesn't need to change every 5 seconds. It has to be there. When I do my quarterly invoices and I have to go to my accountant, it needs to be there. It doesn't need to say, well, you installed this and that, and now this breaks, and oh my God, you'll have to reinstall everything. No, can't work, can't do that. So those are two things that I really have. I've got three things, actually. I need my experimental playground. I need my stuff, a production center for Nightwise.com to do stuff like this. And of course, I need the IT of my company. So what I need is an environment where I have separation between these three fields, my lab, my media production thing, and my company. I need it to be flexible, so you know, I can do something and roll it back, and when I need to move it, I'll need to move it around quickly, and when I need to repair something, it has to be quickly, and I need to have an environment which I can, you know, play in. I need separation between those environments. I don't want files or users or God knows what from Nightwise.com to go into my company data or environment, and I don't want anything experimental coming into Nightwise.com or my company disrupting all kinds of things, setting up an extra DHCP server that completely throws my network off. No. So I need separation. That's important for me. And more importantly, I have vowed like in COW, cow. I have vowed to run only one machine as a server, but I require several. So what I did is I built a hypervisor or a holodeck for my virtual machine. It's a minimal server, so it's a server that runs virtualization software and a little bit else, but not a lot. And it is capable of running the other servers that I require as virtual machines. Then I want to be able to divide up the tasks, services, and requirements over those different servers. So, for example, I need a file server. Okay, I got a server for that. I need a SSH server. Okay, but not on my file server. I want a different server for that. Okay, good. I need a Plex Media server. Not on the file server, different. I need a second file server with different users and a different domains to put my business things in, not on the first server, not on the file server, not on the Plex server, and not on the SSH server. I want it on another server. And I want a centralized place where all of these servers can access the data. So I don't want separate bottles, you know, that are completely separate. There might be things where they need to interact either over a network or over a common data share or a common place where they find their files. Like, for example, I need a server for my downloads. So the server downloads stuff like, for example, YouTube movies or things from the Internet Archive. But I have a media server that plays that to my Chromecast. And that's a different server. So I don't want to copy that over. I just want that data to go to a centralized place where both servers can access it. And I want it all, as I said, COW friendly, cow friendly, into, I want it all in one machine. So, how are we going to do that? Well, that's for the next part. Building a data center in a box requires one thing to start with, and that is a box. A box is a machine, and that machine has to have the things you need, and those are resources. Because depending on what you want to go and do with your machines, your virtual machines, that box, that hypervisor, that, what do I call it, the holodeck or the host machine needs the resources that the virtual machines are going to be able to use. The heavier your machine, the more powerful your machine, the bigger the drives, the more memory, power, and drives that you can set, that you can assign to your virtual machines, hence the faster they will go. Dividing this up kind of depends. I mean, if you have a virtual server that you log into once a week and with one user, you don't need to give 16 gigabytes of memory to that virtual machine. I think, you know, depending on what operating system it is, 2 or 4 will do. And if you have a virtual machine that has a lot to do, you want to assign more RAM to it. It's just like speccing out a server or a workstation, but then you're going to be speccing out virtual machines. If there's one thing I can say is that if you really wanted to buy that i7 processor and you really wanted to buy those 16 gigabytes of RAM, this is where they actually will be used. I have bought a Mac Mini that's over there, 16 gigabytes of RAM and i7. You know, daily use, it uses like this, like 10% out of that awesome power. Started doing building a data center in a box in that thing, you know, running 5 VMs at the same time, assigning each VM 2 gigabytes of RAM and a piece of the processor and a core and, you know, a piece of the hard drive and powering them up. That's when my i7 finally paid off. You know, the little machine was like, oh my God, I've got so much to do. I'm, you know, used to idling all the time. But now it really went kaboom. I liked it. That was... Now, you know, if you say I buy an i7 because, you know, once in a moon I want to, you know, edit a Blu-ray video. Yeah, right, once. But on virtual machines with running a virtual data center, that machine's going to be busy all day long and you're going to get some return on your investment. So it has to have your hypervisor / holodeck / host VM. Host machine has to have resources, disk space, and it has to have some room for backups. That can be an external drive because, you know, you have not only your data sitting on one drive, you actually have 5 or 6 computers sitting on that drive. So you want to back that up. Then you need virtualization software. Got good news for you. I have a cross-platform solution that is great to do this kind of stuff with, and it's called VMware. So that works out of the box, just like that, on Windows, on Mac, and on Linux. There you go. Doesn't cost you anything. And then you need a strategy, because start by drawing this out on a whiteboard, because you're going to have to be very clear on where do you want to store before you begin, where, what do you want to do, how many servers do you need, and how are you going to set them up? That's very important. So what services do you need? How many services are you going to, servers are you going to build, and how you are you going to assign those services to the servers? You know, one for SSH, one for downloading, one for Plex, one for Samba, one for this. That's something that you got to draw up in your head. Make sure that you kind of have an idea of how many users and resources it requires. And then you're going to think about, how am I going to store my files? Because a virtual machine is a computer in one file. You know, it has a virtual hard drive inside with all the virtual files on it, and it's just one file. So if you want to build a virtual machine with a virtual drive of 300 gigabytes, that's going to be one 300 gigabyte file, a blob. You cannot access this file without powering up the virtual machine and going in through the virtual machine. As I said, what is in the holodeck stays in the holodeck. You cannot undress a holodeck character when it's outside of the holodeck or from outside of the holodeck. You'll have to go into the holodeck and, you know, do things to the holodeck character. And if you're there, you're sad. But that being said, so do you want your data to be inside the VMs? This has, you know, can have an advantage because it might be something you really want to close off from the rest of your network. Or do you want to have it outside of your VM? You want it at a central place where many of your machines can access it. It's like, you know, you want all of your files on your laptop, or do you have a Drobo or a NAS drive and you access that over the network? With your virtual machines, it's the same thing. Do you want the data inside the virtual machine, or do you want it somewhere else so the virtual machine can access it over the network? When you do it inside, you get larger virtual machine files, but you get nice separation. Your files are in that virtual computer and it's a real contained little bottle. If you do it outside of the virtual machine, well, your VMs are going to be a lot lighter, a lot smaller, but accessing the data is going to be slightly slower because you're accessing it over the network. And that can be a machine, you know, a NAS drive that's, you know, in the corner of your room, or it can be on the host machine, you know, on the holodeck, on the hypervisor, where it is shared with the virtual machines. That's, of course, a little bit faster. So it all depends on where do you want your data to be, how much data you have, and how fast you want to access it. If you want to access it inside a virtual machine instantly, well, put it inside the virtual machine. If you have a lot of data, I wouldn't put it inside a virtual machine. I would put it somewhere else so you can always access it even if your virtual machine breaks. So once you have your data, you got to think about how you're going to back up your data. Because, you know, are you going to back up your data from your host machine or from your NAS drive? You know, so the data is outside of the virtual machines. Or are you going to keep the data inside the virtual machines and just back up your entire virtual machine? Because that's the great thing of a virtual machine. You can make a snapshot. And that is a moment's, you know, like a picture of that machine at that time. Click. Like exactly like it was. A frozen moment in time. You can store that. And when something goes wrong, either you experiment and you mess up the machine, you can roll back to that snapshot. But beware, it rolls back everything, not only the OS, but also the data that's on there. So let's say you have a virtual machine and you have files in there. You play around with the files, and 5 days later, you play around with the virtual machine and you break something. You say, that's okay, I'll go back to the snapshot of 5 days ago. But that means that you will also be deleting your files. So that's a real risk that you have to be careful about. So the last thing is, think how you want to organize your service. As I said in the beginning, think about what tasks you have, what services you want to run, how many users are going to be on your servers. Think about whether or not those servers have to be online all the time, because there's no shame in powering them down and starting them up. There is, you know, you can just power up a server when you need it. And when that server goes down, you don't need those resources at that time, and they can be assigned to other virtual servers. So it's kind of a strategy, and I know that you're, you know, in your head, you're already drawing out things. So to give you an example, I'll give you an example of how I set up my virtual data center which software that I use, and which tips and tricks I can give you. So, what's my setup? I have in the basement a i7 with 16 gigabytes of RAM, a 1 terabyte internal drive, and two 2 terabyte external drives. On that i7, I have Ubuntu 14.04 running with LXDE. On that system, I have installed VirtualBox, which is the free virtualization software. I have created 3 virtual machines, which are running on that server, and which have gotten an IP inside my network. I have installed their network cards in what is called bridged mode. Bridged mode means that the virtual machine is connected to the network just like every other machine is connected to the network on my own home network. I have 3 virtual machines. One of them is the one for my company. One of them is the one that I use for my podcast. And one of them is one that I use to connect to remotely. And that serves as my download machine to do my BitTorrent downloads when I want to download ISOs, so I can access those remotely. I've chosen a strategy that is mixed. My Ubuntu host machine has 2 terabytes of storage, 2 times 2 terabytes, which is a mirrored RAID 1? I forget, but it's a mirrored drive, so the data is duplicated across the 2 drives. And on that drive is all of my media files, you know, my movies, my music, and the documents that we use here around the house, you know, the general stuff. Those files are shared via Samba sharing. So that's great. The second thing that I have are 3 servers. There are 3 servers on there. And inside those 3 servers, I also have some data. Inside the server for my company, I have my company data. Inside the server of my podcast, I have my podcast production data. And inside the download server, there's actually nothing. These 3 servers run different services, as does the host machine. The host machine runs file sharing, a Samba server, and it runs a Plex media server. This is because Plex needs resources, and it needs to be able to get a hold of my files and stream them to my Chromecast or whatever device that I have. So that works on the host machine. My virtual machines are 3 servers, and my company server basically does nothing except a Samba share for its own home directory. The same goes out for my podcast production server, and the same goes for my download server, which doesn't really have a share. Then I've interconnected some network shares to make sure that data goes up and down. I have mounted my network shares from my virtual machines into my host machine. So let's say on my company virtual machine, I have a folder with company info. That folder is mounted inside my host machine like a folder. I do the same thing with the Nightwise.com stuff. It's mounted as a folder. Why? Well, I just tell my host machine once every day, you know what, take those 2 folders, which are actually the 2 shares on my virtual machines, and back them up. Boom. So I have a backup of those every day. My host machine thinks that these are 2 local folders, but they're actually 2 mounted drives. My download machine's the other way around. I have shared a folder on my hard drive of my host machine and mounted it inside my virtual machine. So my download machine downloads something into the download directory, and that drops immediately into or onto the drive of the host machine. So that way my virtual machine doesn't become very big. It can handle a lot of data because it dumps the data straight to the hard drive of the host machine, which is big enough. That way, when I download an ISO and I get it, have it downloaded, it's immediately available on my host machine, and there it's also shared like a network drive. The second backup strategy that I have is that I tell my host machine to make snapshots. And you can do this using VirtualBox with the program that, you know, is VirtualBox. You can just, you know, select a virtual machine, press a button and make a snapshot. But you can also use a command that is called VBox manage. It's a command line command that lets you do all kinds of crazy things with your virtual machines. One of those being make snapshots from the command line. Why is this important? Well, that way you can script it. You can have it do that automatically. Now, how do I control those virtual machines? Well, I can power them up and power them down via the command line. Again, I go to my host machine and I can type VBox manage, and then the command is start VM and the name of my virtual machine. No problem. So using the command line, I can take snapshots of my virtual machines and I can take, power them up or power them down. And you can do a lot of things with VBox manage, but those are the things that I use the most. Why is this important? Well, because my server downstairs doesn't actually have a screen. So how do I control my virtual machines? I mean, I can access them over the network. I can control their state using the command line, but how do I get to them? Well, there's this great tool called VirtualBox Extensions, which is an add-on to VirtualBox and lets you control every virtual machine with remote desktop. So you just assign a port number, in my case 33, and then the IP address of that server, like 3321 and 3322. And I just go into an RDP client, type in the IP of my host machine, and then colon 3321 for my company server, or 3322 for my Nightwise server, or 3323 for my download server. And I get the remote desktop. And not just the remote desktop, I can really power down the machine and start it back up and still see it. You see the memory counting up and the BIOS and stuff. So it's a real remote desktop, not of the running operating system, but of the actual virtual machine. So if I do need to get to them graphically, I can do that. The three virtual machines I use are, by the way, also Ubuntu 14.04s with LXDE. Desktop's nice and light, and it works. So that's the setup that I am using. You can try it out yourself too. All you need is a host machine with enough resources, a strategy of what you're going to do, and the ability to connect to your host machine with the command line via the command line. So install VirtualBox, create your virtual machine in VirtualBox, install VirtualBox extensions, make sure that you enable remote desktop control for your VirtualBox. You can, for your virtual machine, you can do this in VirtualBox. Make sure that you know the IP of your host machine. And then you can start playing around. You can just access your VirtualBox environment via the command line, start a VM, stop a VM, restart a VM. Or you can remotely control your VMs with an RDP client using the VirtualBox extensions. And that's basically all you need. The rest of what I explained is basic networking, you know, building Samba shares, connecting Samba shares, mounting Samba shares. So I'm not going to, you know, explain that to you, how are you going to do that. But what I hope that I did convey to you is that it is actually fairly simple to build your own data center, and doing it on a box that doesn't really need to have a monitor. Your host machine does need a graphical interface, and it must be able to log on automatically. I start my VMs when my host machine reboots. I start them up manually because I want to have control, but you can script that if you want to because it's a command line. And I must say, it's a lot of fun playing around with resources. But once you have your VMs running, I mean, I have the feeling I have five machines down there in the basement, and I just have one. And all of that by using free, cross-platform friendly, and very, you know, exciting software. And you don't have to pay a dime. All you need is a machine and, of course, a desk to put it under. Because that's what you need for your data center in a box.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for this week on the Nightwise.com podcast. It was quite a bit of technical technobabble to get through, but I hope that I have inspired you to go and play around with virtualization. Using VirtualBox, Linux, a couple of virtual machines, it's all you need together with one box that has enough RAM, enough disk space, and quite a few CPU cycles to spare to do this with. But any i7 or even an i5 with enough RAM that you buy in the store or secondhand or God knows what can do the job admirably. It's great to build different machines, play with them, power them up, power them down. It's great to experiment, but actually once you get it running, it's even better because you can create very stable environments and experiment on other virtual machines and also have those environments available and running all the time. We have, with modern computers, CPU power to spare. We have memory to spare. We're never going to use it all. Why not take that big gaming machine that you don't use anymore and turn it into a data center in a box running different versions of Windows or Linux or all at the same time on one machine and having the idea that your network is actually part of a small data center. That's all we have time for this week. We will see you back in KW807 next week. Until then, you know where to find us. Nightwise.com is the name of the website. If you haven't subscribed yet, do so now. Feedback at Nightwise.com for email. Nightwise.com/Twitter for Twitter. Nightwise.com/Facebook for Facebook. Nightwise.com/Google Plus for Google Plus, and the most important one, Nightwise.com/subscribe to get these podcasts into your podcatcher automatically. If you're on YouTube and you haven't subscribed, head on over to the website. Do it now. You will have technology working for you instead of the other way around. See you guys on the flip side. Bye bye.
Been listening to the Nightwise.com podcast, the show with hacks, tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. Send your feedback, questions, or start your own personal flame war by contacting us directly on feedback@nightwise.com or following us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus. You can support the show by sharing it with your friends or writing us a nice iTunes review at www.nightwise.com/iTunes. Or, if you have some credits to spend, click the PayPal button on the Nightwise.com website to help us pay the bills. Just remember, there is real life outside cyberspace! But it's not all that important.